Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Shut Your Face with your host, me, Bree. Thank you so much for subscribing to this and listening to this and being supportive of this. It means the absolute world. It's the coolest thing ever. So thank you so much for listening to our podcast. Let's get into it. Just a little quick introduction before we just jump into this. Your name is Gil, and you run Mental Athletics, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Awesome. Yes. Okay, well, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for taking the time to do this. Right back to what you said, you're in Israel.
Correct.
Okay, so how...
That is shocker.
I heard about you in the United States. So are you from America or from...
Exactly, yeah. So half Israeli, half American.
Oh,
and
cool.
Since I'm a little kid, I live in the line between the U.S. to Israel. My father is American and my mother is Israeli.
How cool is that? So they have Rainers over there.
Yes, yes. I mean, pretty popular here. Not in the size of, obviously, the U.S., but it's like probably the size of a small affiliate in the U.S.
Yeah.
I mean, very enthusiastic, you know, horse people and reiners and horse trainers and clients and, you know, love doing riding horses. The truth is, it's true for every part of the world. You'll be surprised, I'll tell you that. I mean, I'm really fortunate to be surprised from spots in the world that people are just like, love riding reiners, love showing, love, you know, equine sports, doesn't matter where they're at, so... I think that's a pretty cool thing.
No, it is cool, because the more people I talk to, I hate to sound like I was living under a rock, but I kind of was, because you just don't realize like how big it is in other places. I mean, you don't sometimes if you don't, you know. So let's back up a little bit. Did you grow up around horses?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not from a horse family. You know, when I was young, my parents took me to a summer camp for a computer summer camp, and one of the days... they took us to the ranch to ride some horses, you know, to give us a stroll around. And I was like, hell with computers, I want to ride horses, you know. And since then, I get the bug. And, yeah, I grew up as a youth rider, became a horse trainer, worked in the U.S. for quite a few years as a professional horse trainer, came back to Israel, built my business, and, you know. And then it's all developed and grew to what we're doing today with Mental Athletics, you know. Focusing on the mindset aspect of competitive equine sports, yeah.
Well, that was my next question. So what prompted Mental Athletics? Like, were you in the show pen and you just had something happen, or somebody happened that you know, something happened to somebody else that you know? Like, what prompted to start this business?
I think all the answers you gave up are true. You know, I think there were many things that came together for me. It sits on two things. One, I felt as a competitor, you know. I mean, I was, you know, as a competitor, as a horse trainer, as a coach for many non-pros over the years, you know, I was very much aware of the impact of the specific rider's mindset over their performance. If I could do something about it, I mean, I used my intuition as a horse trainer, like many horse trainers do, and try to help the rider, you know, I mean... peak perform at the right moment. So from one side, I was very much aware to the impact or how powerful the mindset in our success or failure in the show pen. Alongside to that, I love sports, you know. And you look to other sports and sports psychology and mindset coaching becomes, you know, a vital part in, you know, in all main sports. And I'm thinking to myself, I was like, doesn't make sense to me that, you know, all those great sports, you know, Eli Sports have the whole a developed theme of sports psychology, and in our sport, equestrian sports, and I have to say, in the show jumping and in the dressage world, the English aspect of it, it's much more developed than in the Western field.
Yeah.
But for me, I was like, all right, so, you know, let's go learn about it a little bit. And I met some interesting professionals, you know, to kind of understand a little bit more about the world. And one of them kind of told me that the art of sports psychology or mindset coaching called the technology of the sport. He said, you know, a football sports psychologist will have a hard time to help a horse, you know, a competitive equine rider. You know, the athlete in every sport is looking for an individual that understands its world and understands, you know, the back themes of what leads us to where we're at playing this competitive game. And I saw something that was missing. I was like, all right, that's an interesting path to go through. I found, you know, a lot of interest in it. I felt that I haven't had an opportunity to be very good at it. And, you know, this is what I do today.
A lot of people, you hear a lot of people say if a horse makes a mistake, it's never the horse's fault. It's always the person's fault. So, and you can see a lot of people talk like online and stuff as far as social media. I've seen a lot of conversations where people literally ask, how do I get over the anxiety? How do I get over this? How do I deal with this? Because a lot of people already know it is very mental when it comes to riding a horse.
Mm-hmm.
So it's cool that you have those tools out there for people to use, or, you know, hire you to use or whatever to help that. What's one of kind of the biggest obstacles that you've seen people face as far as the show pen goes, not just particularly for reiners, but for all of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest obstacle is that we expect our horse to be the competitor when actually our horse is only the athlete. You know, I mean, the way I see it, you know, it's a team sport. It's not an individual sport. It's not only Gil stepping into the show pen, it's Gil and it's horse.
Yeah.
But it's a unique team sport because that's the only sport in the world where the rat is the competitor and the horse is the athlete. Meaning that you and I, we choose to live a competitive life. We choose to enjoy the thrill of victory, but at the same time, suffer from the agony of defeat. We choose to be observed, judged, and evaluated on our riding abilities.
Yeah.
But still, our success is always dependent on our horse performing their highest athletic abilities when it counts in the show pen.
Yeah.
Although I don't believe my horses have any clue that they're living a competitive life. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think they know when they're stepping into the arena by themselves, they know something's happening. All right. Something weird, you know, it's different than what it was the last few days, but still they don't know the difference between winning and losing and finishing top 10 or making the finals or not. They care nothing about it. And I think that the biggest mistake that us riders we do, we expect our horses to be good competitors, to handle the pressure. And it's not their job to handle the pressure. It's our job to handle the pressure of the game, of the competitive game. And if we do a good job with that, usually we create a team, a strong and confident team that helps us or allows us to peak perform when it counts. So I think the main trigger is that we put the pressure of the competitive game over the horse to be handling it. And, you know, I think that's the place for us to take responsibility for that. And it's pretty cool because it creates a win-win situation because, you know, I deal with, like you said, all the anxiety, the stress, you know, being overwhelmed. I work on myself. I condition myself to be ready to be challenged.
Yeah.
And suddenly I can see my horse reacting to it, and usually in a very positive way.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think that some people aren't mentally prepared to accept the fact that they need a mental coach to do better?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that when I started, you know, this whole idea, and I was a horse trainer in the U.S. I have a lot of colleagues and know a lot of people. It was a blessing because that what opened a lot of doors for me. But in the beginning, I had some doors shut on my face. I'm like, Gil, what you talking about, man? I mean, but I think that it's inevitable. You know, I think that everybody, between if they say it out loud or not, they're understanding the importance of it. I don't see myself only as a mental coach. That's the truth. All right. I'm still in this journey of defining myself, what exactly I am, because I'm a mental coach and I'm also a horse trainer, and
probably a therapist too.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, I'm a competitor.
Yeah.
I love the life of a competitive life.
Yeah.
You know, I'm addicted to competing, and I think that there's a reality that is always challenging us mentally. I always say riding horses is pretty simple. They've been doing it for thousands of years. But riding horses in a competitive theme, makes it a lot more difficult, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's our place to grow and to overcome that and see it, learn the best form of ourselves, you know, and in that competitive environment.
And you can't talk to your teammate. I mean, it's not like the horse can sit down and go, "Hey, look, this is what's going on." I mean, you know.
I wish we could.
Right. It'd make it a lot easier. What's kind of the biggest, I've kind of wondered this as far as, you know, from the outside looking in. You know, it's hard enough to compete in the equine industry because it's, you, like you said a minute ago, your team is a living, breathing thing that doesn't speak compared to other sports where you have teammates and people that speak and you can meet and you can talk. I think that kind of sets equestrian sports away from other types of sports. Do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, what does that, you think that affects the mentality of the people that are in equestrian sports? Because we're small. Like, you know, equestrian in general is already small, but the sport part of it is even smaller. You know, do you think that kind of affects a person's mentality even outside of the ring? Because I saw an article once a couple of years back where this lady wrote about how you have to be friends with the person that you're competing against. And, you know, when you go into the show pen, we're all not spending this money just for fun. I mean, you can say that, but we, you know, we want to win. You want a result out of it. But when you come out, you still have to be friends. Whereas sometimes a competitor's mentality is, you know, that's not your friend. You need you not be friends with this person. You know, have you seen how it's kind of hard to tag that line? Or what do you suggest for that, do you think?
Yeah, I think I separated two divisions. I'd say it this way. I think there is the open division, right, that these are horse trainers, open riders, that's what they do. You know what I mean? I mean, their whole definition of life is being training horses and preparing those horses to compete and competing with them in many different levels and many different, you know, equine sports. But I think that for me, the more, like, so this is one, and this is one way to look at it, and these are, let's say, sheer competitors, sheer athletes, that's all they do, okay? A horse trainer has no time to do any other thing but train horses for a living and, you know, travel from one horse show to another. I think what is very also very interesting is the non-pro, the amateur part of equine sports, all right? Because, you know, equine sports is one of the only competitive sports that it's highly competitive, even if it's in the amateur field. People are not making a living from competing with horses. The opposite. They spend a lot of money competing, you know, and different equine sports. Now, I had a client a long time ago said something to me very interesting that I took with me, along my journey. She said, You gotta understand that the majority of the amateurs that are able to compete in this life as competitive equestrian riders are A-type individuals. These are people that in their private life are very successful. They can afford themselves to have a horse. Okay, they're probably somebody's boss. You know, I mean, they're people that are very dominant. And she said, but what the beautiful thing is that when I get on my horse, he can make me feel that small.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and she said, this is the kind of contradiction that I'm always dealing with, and I love it, and always fun, but that's why I do it. Because, you know, we buy new horses, we compete, I win that show, I don't make the final of that show. I mean, there's always tomorrow. But she says, you know, to take an A-type individual and a horse could make him feel, you know, out of control, you know, not the dominant one in this competitive sport, not necessarily the dominant leader, but a different kind of leadership, that's actually is highly addictive. And I see a lot of non-pros and amateurs in our sport, you know, that thing that hooks them.
Yeah.
The fact that they never feel better than that sport. They never feel just like too big to go ride horses, you know. There's always another horse show and another young horse or another something that will challenge them to be that much better. And that's the addictive part of it. So I think this is that thing that, you know, pulls us into it so much.
Like a muse, kind of.
Yeah.
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 Did you have a particular horse that kind of set your mind in a new level? Did you have a horse that you rode or showed or whatever have you that kind of pushed you to look more at the mental aspect of the game versus the physical aspect?
Absolutely. I mean, I think I said that all of us have that horse that changed our life, you know?
Yeah.
We all have that unicorn that was something for us. And for me, yeah, it was quite a few years ago. Was a mare that I actually came back here to Israel, and I took a break from horses for a few years, and I got this mare. She was a 5-year-old mare, and everybody told me about this mare, that she's very talented, but she's hot and a bit crazy, and I'm like, all right, you know, thank you for letting me know that. And I got to ride her, and she was a freak. I mean, she could do reining maneuvers. I mean, she could turn, she could stop, she could do everything. But after a few rides, I told myself, wow, she really hates her job. Really, I mean, I go to the arena, and from the second we're in there, she just wants to leave. She wants to do anything but not to participate with me. And I asked myself, all right, can I make her like the job? And one of the first things I did, I just kind of went to a really, really small bridle, like a snaffle with a small shank, you know. And I told myself, just that's my goal, to make her love this job. Like, you know, be a good, you know, partner, you know, just to ride. And really, 2-3 months into this training process, suddenly she became the most amazing show horse I ever had. I mean, I pretty much won everything here in Israel with her for like 3-4 years, and then the Napa took over and won everything for 3-4 years, you know, and she kept on showing to us until she was like 13 years old. And what I always say about her that really changed me was, I was always focusing on conditioning myself into this ride, okay? I was always aware of how I'm bringing myself into each and every ride. So one thing was like really conditioning myself, and two was the art of let's call it like the art of listening to the horse. You know, I think we're very, very good at speaking to the horse, telling them what we want them to do. But in many cases, when we are not mentally conditioned, we're lacking the ability to listen to the horse. And for me, you know, a strong mental state is not about focus only. It's not about confidence. I mean, these are things that come through from you know, high quality process. But I think the mental game is about conditioning myself to think like a horse. Although I have all the distractions in the path of competitive life, the story, winning, losing, the money spent, you know, making the client happy, or, you know, not disappointing my wife or whatever. I mean, beside all those stories, to be able to get on the horse and think like a horse, you know, connect to your horse and do the best horsemanship you can, that's the definition of mental toughness, of resilience, the way I see it. And that's where I'm trying to lead, you know, the riders I'm fortunate to work with, you know, because...
That's very eye-opening. Yep. Because you are right. You can watch people just kind of skip over the horse and not even think about what they're thinking because they get too comfortable with them, maybe, or they just don't, you know, think anything else about it because the horse doesn't speak, you know. And then you also, do you ever kind of encounter just horse people tend to be stubborn and they get stuck in their ways of what's right and what's wrong and what's this and what's that? You know, that can kind of hinder people too as far as showing is concerned. What do you suggest for that, or is that just something they'll have to figure out themselves?
Yeah, I think you cannot force anybody to change their mind if they don't have the interest in changing it.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And I'll tell you one thing that I'm learning, you know, the best riders I see, all right, the highest, like the competitors in the highest levels, they're not as competitive as you would think.
Yeah.
They're learners. They're always there to figure out something. You know, one of the things that motivated me the most because was that, you know, my first, you know, when I started to with mental aesthetics, actually you'll be surprised that, all right, so that the middle layer wasn't very interested in what it was doing. The lower layer of competitors, the one that was struggling with sensitivity, were like, oh man, can you help me? But what really blew my mind was that the best riders in some of the Western fields reached out and was like, man, I want to hear what you're talking about. I want to know what you have there that I can learn. I can, you know, take to my program and master it. You know, I mean, and I was fortunate to work, and I'm still fortunate to work with some of the best riders in this field. And because if you want to take yourself to the next level, you got to use all the information that is being there provided. You know, so you'll go watch a training clip, you'll go want to learn to do some vet treatment on your horse, shoeing, and also of yourself, mentally, physically, technically.
I've always thought it was a red flag if somebody spoke like they knew it all already. Because to me, I'm just like, first of all, there's no way for you to know it all. But second of all, like, to not have any type of arrogance speaks lack of confidence, I guess, for me it does. So I'm glad you said that. That makes me feel better because I think that would be cool too, you know? Because you think they're like way up here and they're already up there and you don't need to, you know, they wouldn't need you. But for them to be like one of the first ones to go, hey, what's up? That's probably comforting for you. Now, what's this picture in the background with the bridleless horse? Is that you?
Yeah, that's me. That's actually that man I was just talking about.
Oh, cool.
So that's one of the articles we had in the NHRA Rainer quite a few years ago. She was a special horse for me. So
very cool. You know,
I was happy to.
Is it? Do you ever come over here at all for the shows or no?
Yeah, I travel every month. I'm somewhere around the world. Really, I mean, I'm fortunate to work with riders in the U.S., Europe, Australia, Southern America. So yeah, I make it to the U.S. 2-3 times a year, and to Europe again 2-3 times a year, and if I get a chance. And there's the option also make it to Australia, and that's really cool, you know. I mean, I think that's a privilege to be traveling around and work with riders. And
yeah, no, it really is, because you're like, I think other people probably think the same way I do. You live in a rock in the horse community, because you don't think, like, it sounds dumb, but you just like don't think, you're like, no, you know, there's nothing out there. But it's big in other areas. Like Brazil is really big with horses. I didn't know this.
Very big.
Yeah, you know, I didn't know this until I learned, started talking to people, and I'm like, holy cow, I didn't know that. So that's really cool. Do they put on shows differently over there compared to how the U.S. does it? Is there a massive difference or no?
Not really. I mean, really, that's a beautiful thing. I mean, if you are competing in a competitive, like in a equine sport, whatever it's going to be, it could be raining, cutting, working cow horse all around. I mean, doesn't matter where you put yourself in the world, you're going to a horse show in the sport you ride, you feel at home.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, maybe not the same level and quality of horses, but the culture-wise is...
Yeah.
It's crazy. I mean, people love it, and I was always in the U.S. You know, U.S. is a big leader of it. But I think that you saw just now the Run for a Million in Vegas, a European guy won it. You know, I mean, with a European horse, it was amazing to see. So
yeah,
I think that's pretty cool. Yeah.
Well, I didn't know. I was asking because, like in Brazil, I know when it comes to barrel racing down there, they do it completely different. They do bit checks. Really? They do weights for the people. Like it's a whole different ball game compared to how they do it in the United States. So I didn't know if it changed much as far as that's concerned. No. Okay. Now, as far as, like, do you still ride now? Do you still compete?
Yeah, I compete. Yeah, and I ride. I mean, I closed my training business back in 2020. You know, I send my clients to some of my colleagues here. But I keep my own horses. I have a couple of partners that, you know, invest in what I do.
Yeah.
And we keep between 2-4 horses. Some of them are here, some of them are in Europe, some of them sometimes make it to the U.S. And you know, we train our horses, we send them to some trainers in Europe and in the U.S. We compete with them ourselves. And for me, I keep on riding every day.
Yeah.
And I ride 2-3 horses because I don't have time to ride more than that. But I call it the laboratory for me. You know, that's the place that I go there and my mind works. You know, I'm training a horse. I'm preparing for a horse show. I'm going to compete. You know, it's very important to put myself online. You know, if I wanna help an individual that is a competitive rider. You know, I mean, I have to get in his head. And the only way for me to get into his head is to put the cowboy hat on and the boots and the chaps and go show, you know.
Yeah.
Take the chance to succeed, take the chance to fail, and and grow from it. Yeah. So, yeah, absolutely.
Now, why do you think the English side of the industry is far more advanced as far as mental athletics, for better use of words? Is, you know, why do you think they're more advanced as far as that's concerned versus the Western industry?
I think for two reasons. I think one thing that they're an Olympic sport. And once you become an Olympic sport, the government usually, you know, provides you the framework, you know, to bring your best into the Olympics every 4 years. Okay? And part of it is the psychological aspect of it, you know. I can tell you here in Israel, you know, the Olympic sports, they have some great sports psychologists, like, helping them, and really we have some sports that are just teams are game changers in the power of the competitive team. So I think that they're Olympic, and the second thing, they've been here a bit longer, you know. I mean, show jumping, I don't know how many years it goes back, but it's much more like Western sports we're fairly young, you know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, we're pretty new in this, and we're progressing in high speed, but that's, I would think, the reason. Not because the culture. For me, it's not the culture. It's the opposite. I can tell you that if I could tell you in the beginning, I had some doors shut in my face. Now a lot of doors are opening up, you know, and a lot of interesting people are showing interest in it, want to see what we do, you know, want to hear about it. Because, you know, why not take a chance to succeed? Why not take a chance to become better? So,
well, I could see that in the beginning when you started, you know, because the cowboy persona is very, like, hard. It's very, like, tough, very, like, you don't want to talk about that certain type of stuff, you know, suck it up. And so I could see where that probably was a door shut in your face for a little bit of time. But how long have you been in business or been doing this?
I've been doing it full time, you know, a little bit over 5 years now. When I opened Mental Athletics, I started doing it before a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, now we're in our fifth year.
That's pretty fast, though. I mean, that's cool, though, that you were able to kind of change the way people were thinking, because I could see that, you know, because it was very much kind of ingrained in my brain. I know when I was growing up showing, not like Rainers or anything like that, but, you know, you just kind of sucked it up. That's what they taught you. You just sucked it up. You just dealt with it. You didn't really entertain those thoughts that you might have needed to entertain to better yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's cool to see that in the industry.
Yeah, I also try to be very, very practical. And what I mean by practical, you know, I'm also very, you know, oriented towards, like, training tools. Horse people like to have a tool. All right, I understand there's a challenge. What can I do about it? Not everybody will like to, you know, I mean, sit down and have a conversation about it. That's fine. All right. But for me, one of the things that, if you go into my website, if you go into my online courses, you'll see that a big part of it is sharing with you practical tools to help you mentally condition yourself to execute high level horsemanship in a highly competitive and public environment. And that's, for me, the thing that I understood that I was looking for as a horse trainer, as a competitor, all right? I was looking for tools that I can practice them. I can master that part, add it to the other things I need to take care of preparing to show, and it's completed to high performance.
Yeah.
You know, and the second thing is that I understood that it's, you know, it's not this individual, that individual are struggling. Everybody struggles in a certain part of their journey, and nobody will deny that.
Right. Well, no, some people will deny that. Some people might not want to admit it, but I totally agree. I'll be the first to tell you, like, you know, because I don't know if this is true or not, but you can let the outside world affect inside of the show can.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think a lot of people struggle with that. I know I used to struggle with that. Even some of the things that you probably teach for horse riders can be applied for business owners. It can be applied in all other different areas. Could you, you know, agree with that, just as far as the mental, you know, principles?
Absolutely, yes. I don't go there because I always tell myself, all right, like, that's the world I play in, all right, the equine sport. If somebody chooses to take it to their own, you know, in their own different aspects of life, I mean, for me, it's a blessing.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily aim towards that direction.
Right.
I believe really I'm being in mastering something very, very specific. Okay. For me, riding a horse is something that we should not overlook. It's almost sacred. Okay. I mean, you're getting on an animal and you want to make this animal do something for you. All right. That's your starting point. Now, how are you going to do it? 1,000 ways to do it. All right. You know, and nothing, you know, the end of the day, all we see is the winner and who didn't make it to the finals, who didn't make the cut. That's what we can see, okay? But the truth is the process is a lot more challenging. It's a lot deeper. It's a lot more, it's a great challenge every given day. I mean, I can tell you that I'm working with riders now at the horse show in Tulsa, and they're going to show today. Just today happened that their horse worked terrible, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it happened to all of us, right?
Right.
Now, the question
right.
is not if your horse worked good or bad. The question is, how did you react?
Yeah. Yeah, very true.
You know? And if you reacted the way you're proud of, usually it will help you succeed at the show open. Usually you'll learn something from it. Usually you'll feel good with yourself, you know? So it's not about only making your horse be good in the show pen. It's when he's good, how do you react? When he's bad, how do you react? And put that in a time frame of you know, competitive sports, because you need to show on a certain day and a certain time. You got to make sure your horse is ready.
Yeah.
And it's not always as you wish, you know. A lot of times it goes off track and you know, we take the long route to where we want to get to.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, it's a good thing that trainers have you available, that or they can hire you to help you, because sometimes the only thing that they have, even competitors, the only thing they have in their ear is a customer or the horse, or they have nowhere to actually go and have somebody kind of look at them without all of that and can bring it back down to reality. Because, you know, there's a lot of pressure with being a horse trainer, because you are still owning a business. You still have to compete, you have to run the business, you have to do this, you know. So that's cool. Do you have like a particular situation or person or client that just really stood out to you that you had a huge change in, or any type of situation that kind of just stuck with you throughout your career so far that you've helped?
There are many. That's the truth.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I can't, and I don't want to pick up a name, because I think, you know, it's each one of us personal journey. But there were many. I think there were many moments that something happened there, and we're like, wow, you know, and I was part of my ride up, was part of myself to bring that in. You know, I always tell my riders, you know, I mean, that going back to what you said about the horse trainers, all right. There's a rider that I'm very familiar working with. His name is Gabriel Borges. He's one of the up-and-coming trainers in the reining industry. He's a young Brazilian rider. He's in his early 30s, and he already won major events. He's getting closer to $1 million. And, you know, he reached out 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. He reached out to me, you know, still a young trainer, just opened his business in Arizona. And he said, you know, Gil, I heard about your program, and let's start, you know, working on this program. So I did the foundation program. We worked together, and after we finished that, usually we were like, okay, so you can choose. We can keep on working at horse shows. We can, you know, a lot of riders, you know, like, that's exactly what they were looking for, and we, you know, keep in contact, but not necessarily in close work. And then he says, Gil, you know, I love sports, and I see all the great athletes in other sports. They have people in their corner, you know? And he said, right now, my mission is to build a team to be in my corner.
I don't blame
you. Know?
Yeah.
You
right.
know? I mean, I need the people to be in my corner, help me be my best.
Yeah.
In this journey.
Sure.
You know, and that was something that you really changed my perspective. I'm not here to help you fix something or overcome something or even succeed in that show, you know? It's that position to be in somebody's corner, you know, that you're there, you're focused on them, but them, they also know that you're there in case they need you for the success, for the challenges, for the failures. I mean, we're living in this life. And that was a defining, you know, statement, a defining moment that I took with me, and I presented as that position today to many of the riders that, you know, I get to work close to them. You know, you got me in your corner. You know, my goal is your success, and you know that I'm always there 24/7. My phone is available for you to reach out, and you know, we're here in this journey together. And I think that's cool. You know, that's a big privilege.
No, that is really cool. I'm glad you said that, because you do some kind of need to separate. It can be very easy to stay in that business mindset and then like cut it off at 5 and separate it. But the fact that, you know, you're able to do that, and he sat there and said, I needed that. That's kind of cool, because you do need that. Like, you know,
I mean,
well, especially with horses, because granted, yes, it is a business. There's a lot of money running through it. Exactly. But at the end of the day, most of these people, like you even said earlier, the majority of them are doing it for fun. You know, they're not, you know, the professional aspect of the horse industry is very small. They're way up here,
yeah.
You know, but the other one, they're doing it for fun. And so it's hard to keep that line clean of, we want to compete, we want to win, but let's not let this ruin our life.
I mean, I get, this is the thing, this is the misconception. We all want to win, right? But in our sport, it's not about winning. And I'll surprise you here. And the reason it's not about winning is because, you know, we all come to a horse show. Sometimes we know very well that our horse is not going to win the show, right? You know, and that's all right. I mean, maybe that the other horse, he's got a chance to win. My pony is not here to win. And this is a cool thing. The unique aspect of our sport is that we all chase a mutual, let's call it factor, and I call it peak performance. If you're able to bring your horse get a show open and get the best out of your horse, it does not matter what place you place. I promise you that. It doesn't matter if you finish second, first, 10th, or 50th. If you feel that you got the most out of your horse, reach that peak ability of your horse in a certain place at a certain time, you are happy.
There you go.
You are a happy person, happy competitor.
Yeah.
Okay? And that's a beautiful thing about it, because then the whole focus shifts. And not necessarily me against them. I'm playing the game that it's here for me.
Right, right.
The challenge is for me to get that best out of my horse, and that creates an A-type individual, an A-type competitors, that we are really chasing a vision as opposed to just being better to than the other 20. Now, if we are as good as we can and we have the quality of horse, then we can also win, obviously.
Right,
you
right.
know?
You just made me think about something. Have you ever had a client where you had to pull out of that winning competitive edge, where it's too much, where they lose sense of everything? Have you ever had anybody just kind of go, hey, because, you know, as a trainer, I can see where they probably get pressure from customers, they get pressure from breeders, they get pressure from this and that, because it can be a lot of pressure. Have you ever had to have somebody where you just had to pull them out of that mindset, like, hey, look, it's not about winning right now?
Is it a nice way to ask, have you ever pissed off one of your clients?
Well, I mean, I'm going to go to a golden rule of thumb. I would rather be respected than liked. And if I got to tell the truth to be respected, I'm okay. In a nice way.
Yeah. I tell you what, my riders know, you know, they know that I will always tell them my truth, but it's my truth. And I'm not always right. I mean, might be wrong.
Right.
You know, like for me, but they need to hear that voice. That's why I'm here for. So if you can, I can, might think that this rider is too deep into that competitive mindset, like you just said. If I thought so, I would tell him that.
Yeah.
But if he would still go that same path that he was, as long as that person is not harming himself, his horse, or his surroundings, but it's just like a choice of an approach, I'll be there adjusting myself to them and not making them adjust themselves to what I think. You know, I can tell you, you know, a few years back, one of my best clients in Europe, you know, she was searching for a horse. And she sent me a horse that I really disliked. You know, I mean, I didn't like that horse. And she asked me what would I think about it. And I told her what I thought about it, that I don't like that horse. And she went and bought that horse, you know. And she didn't tell me about it for like, I don't know, it was a week.
Yeah.
And then she couldn't hold herself, you know. She told me, oh, and I'm like, awesome, let's do it.
Right.
She's like, oh, I thought you were going to be disappointed. I said, you asked my opinion, I gave you my opinion, but now my job is to help you go, where is that horse? Not to tell you I don't like it anymore. Now I need to start liking it and finding the ways to succeed, you know. So
yeah.
So this is the thing, you know, you can tell your opinion, but your opinion is not the hard knock truth. It's another voice that that specific competitor can trust, that voice to be real, that will be with no, you know, how to say, like, hind thoughts, you know. My personal goal is to be as real and maybe supportive to that rider to succeed,
right.
Okay? But I'm not there only just to build their confidence. I'm a lot of times I'm breaking riders' mind. You know, a lot of times my riders that are close to me, we leave a conversation, a session, like, oh man, you know, you really got me thinking now. You know, I mean, I need to think about it for a few days until the next time. I do that a lot of times. We practice ugly. You know, my personal philosophy. Yeah. So yeah, that's my training philosophy. It's called practicing ugly, and practice ugly is about a weakness oriented approach. All right. You don't need me to help you with your strengths. Whatever you're good at comes natural, my friend. Mm-hmm. You know, a practice ugly is like, all right, let's find where our weaknesses are, and let's play there.
Yeah.
And the whole idea is that equine sports are very exposed sports. When you go to a horse show, you practice to show with all your peers around you, with people in the stand city watching you, and you feel judged and observed all the time.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That the self-awareness of your image a lot of times hold you back from maximizing your ability and preparing this horse as good as you could. And practice ugly is a slogan that I really implement in people's mind, that it's good with them, and I'm really happy that it's catching. You know, I see it in many places now, this whole idea of the philosophy of practicing ugly, really doing whatever you need to do today, no matter how many, you know, distractions you have around you. And that's actually the secret of the greatest riders. I did not invent it. I just gave it a great name, you know, the catchy name. I was observing some of the greatest athletes, you know, as a young trainer. And I thought they're going to lose at that horse show, you know, because their horses looked terrible. And the following day, they would just went there and executed beautiful runs.
Right.
You know, and you know, the whole idea of practicing ugly is it sits on three core values. One is be real, you know, be authentic, be who you are. You know, you're not perfect, I'm not perfect. We have strength, we have weaknesses, mm-hmm. You know. But if you choose to be real in this process of preparing yourself as a competitor, as a horse, you know, equine athlete, you become comfortable to do what you need to do and confident about doing it in a highly competitive public environment. You know, so if you're real, you become confident in your abilities and comfortable to act, to work, to take actions, you know, no matter how it looks. And then you lead to the highest core value that I talked a little bit before about it, that best teams win. I don't believe that the best rider or the most talented rider is going to win the show, neither the best or the most talented horse. It's that connection.
Yep.
It's that team that will be the most connected that specific day that usually will win. And this is the three core values that we're led by when we choose to practice ugly.
Yeah. No, I love it. I think it's great. It's like no pain, no gain when you're in the gym. You know, like if you look pretty in the gym, are you really actually working? You know?
So, yeah. Absolutely.
What is something that you want to kind of leave with people? You know, when somebody hires you or somebody goes through one mm-hmm. of your courses or speaks to you, what's something that you would want to leave with them or what you would want them to take away from that?
The biggest thing that I try to do as part of what I do is creating the notion that there is always an additional path to reach your goal. It's not make it or break it. It's not one path and this is the only way I can do it. All right, we can, a lot of times if we take a step back and we kind of zoom out on the situation we're at, we see an additional options and additional strategies that we can reach where we want to. And I think that one of the untalked about challenges in our sport is that a lot of times I feel that we, like let's say call it horse welfare, okay? There's a lot of notion for horse welfare.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that as a horse trainer, one of the things that brought me to become a mindset coach is the fact that I felt that riders are not fair on their horses, not because they're not good riders or not good horses, it's because they're a little bit overwhelmed by the pressure of the game.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest notions that I try to kind of develop is the win-win situation. You know, if I'm in a good mental state, usually I feel better. I'm in a better place. And then I am challenging my horse in ways that I'm proud of, and better horsemanship. You know, I see the horse in this process. I see myself in this process, and I can get to the best results, even better than it was before, by doing things a bit different.
Yeah.
You know, by conditioning myself, working on myself, and bringing myself in this game in a stronger way. And that's, once you taste that, I mean, you can't go back from it. You know, it's just very powerful.
Yeah, to being able to do another, see another perspective on how to do something could be eye-opening. You know, a lot of people miss out when they don't do that, you know?
I agree.
Yeah.
You know?
Now I'm preaching to the choir here. So, what do you think about? I was going to ask you something else as far as showing us concerned. Oh yeah. How big of an impact? This is probably going to sound like a dumb question, but how big of an impact are outside factors that have nothing to do with horses? Have you seen affect people, or how much they let it affect people? Because you know. You know, when things happen in your life that are outside of the horse industry and outside of the pen, it's easy to just stick it away, push it away, like put it on a back burner, put it in the closet. But do you ever try to, like, assess the fact that those things can creep up into people and it can affect their competition? It can affect what they do. How do you suggest handling that, or do you ever see that?
So you're asking, I'm not sure I understood the question. It's like there's outside distraction or outside things come into the world of like our competitive journey or competitive life.
Yeah,
I see it all the time. I mean, we're human. I think it goes back to practicing ugly. You're not perfect. I'm not perfect.
Right.
We all got, you know, things to deal with. And I think that it's people's choice. I see a lot of times people deal with certain struggles that they choose to push it aside. That's a choice they make. You know, that's fine. And some people choose to be very open about something and work on that. That's also fine. What is better than the other? I don't know. You know, depends on the individual, depends on the situation. And we have to be, you know, we have to be true. You know, we all go through those things. You know, for me, even myself, you know, I'm my biggest client. You know, everything that I tell all my riders all the time, whatever I'm going to work with you, don't worry. I try that myself first.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You know, but, but yeah, it comes with you. I think that everything you do in life plays out to the way you perform on the saddle.
That's what I was trying to ask. I mean, like, it's easy to let outside things affect, where, you know, a competitor may say, okay, well, this is non-horse related, I don't need to worry about it. Or this doesn't have anything to do with horses, it's not going to affect me. When actually those things will seep in and affect people. That's what I'm asking.
It will affect them, but not necessarily in ways you would think. You know, for some individuals, might be some really big challenges in life, and actually going to a horse show is the ability to disconnect and live in a parallel world for at least 3 to 5, 6 days, all right, and succeed and win, and really, I mean, feel freedom, and after 6, 7 days, they're going back to their whatever struggle they dealt with. So
gotcha.
It's not necessarily as a negative thing. What happens in life comes with you, or positive what happens in life. It's, you know, I think that it's each individual is dealing with it differently, and you got to remember that for us equine athletes, we it's longevity. I mean, I never met a person that quit competing. All right, maybe you don't have a horse for now, but the moment you have the interest or the money to get a horse, you know, it's for life. You know, you are competing from the moment you know something about the moment you made this choice to become a competitor. Okay, you quit when you only physically cannot ride horses anymore. I mean, that's the time you quit.
Right.
You know, and you see, and we can ride for many years. So it's really gold with us for like through life. So everything that we go through life comes with us to the horse life, but. You know, that's a lot of times that is our therapy, you know, to come to those horses, to succeed, to fail, to ride, to clean your horse's stall, to be your horse's slave, whatever, you know. And sometimes, you know, I mean, it's not only the reflection of where you're at, it's also a lot of times the place to be that keeps us sane, you know, it keeps us happy.
Something to get away.
Yeah. I mean, again, I don't think, like, I don't see it in a dark way. I mean, right. The opposite. I think it's actually, you know, you go to horse shows, I mean, the people are living their dreams. That's the truth.
Yeah, well, there's probably, like, burnout. You probably deal with people who have burnout, too, as far as a trainer is concerned, or people that run it as a business. They could get burnt out, you know.
I think yeah, there are quite a few burnouts. But the question is why. You know, I think one of the things that you see a lot more, I mean, in the non-pro or the amateur field, I don't see too many burnouts. I mean, I see some people are frustrated or
right.
stuff like that, and they choose to take a break and find other interests. Not a lot, but I see that here and there. But I think when you think about burnout, you think more about, like, the professional aspects of it, the people that's what they do, and now they're, like, out of it. So I think burnouts is a lot of times happens because you don't afford yourself to live. You put yourself in a mentality of that or that. Or I do it or I don't do it. Or I do it great or I don't do it. And I think that life is not about that or that. Like, it's about that and that. And you see a lot of people, and I'm part of that movement, you know. I'm also still a horse trainer, okay? I train horses. I mean, not for a living, but as my daily life, I still train horses every day. But I think the sport is, if you can do something and to do another thing, that is part of this world, you know, it's kind of helps you grow, you know, and it helps you keep that longevity of the horseman, you know, and you're adding something to the sport, you find your interest, you know. I was a horse trainer. I knew in my life I'm going to be only a horse trainer. I didn't know what I'm going to be, you know, but I had this feeling that there's something else that I want to do, and, you know, I'm fortunate I found something that I'm very interested in, and I love it, so.
I think it's always cool to talk to people that are in the horse industry that didn't grow up around horses. It's always interesting, because it's like, those are always the people that, like, go a lot further than the people that are, like, I don't want to say born into it, but are around it. They always end up knowing more about whatever they're doing. They all might succeed more when it comes to it when they haven't been around it. So that's cool. It's cool that you came from that to this to where you are now. So,
yeah, I mean, I really feel blessed. I really feel blessed. And that's awesome, you know. Look, here we are sitting here and talking about the industry, about the sport, about, you know, what I do. And I think it's cool, you know. And if there's one person here that, you know, will take something from it and really will open their thought, you know, open their curiosity, you know. So I think that's my goal. I always tell myself, I start with one, go to 10, to 100, to 1,000, 10,000, a million, 10 million, 100 million around the people around the world, you know, spark this life, you know, yeah. This light of like well-being, high performance, leadership. You know, that's my mission. And, you know,
yeah, I think it's great. I think it's wonderful. I'm glad it's out there, because, like I said before, you know, it's not, you didn't hear of mental athletics, you didn't hear of help as far as competing is concerned or things of that nature, when it really is, should be something that should be talked about a lot more, and more tools out there for the horse person.
Yeah, absolutely.